Melissa, over recent years, we've seen the really dire health impacts of mass displacement caused by war. Like many natural and man-made disasters, women and girls face disproportionate or additional layers of injustice. Is that something that this commission will be focused on, the impact on women and girls?
Yes, I would think so, given that inequality and justice is a central focus of this commission. And in countries where women and girls might be responsible, for example, for collecting water and caring for family members, the burden on them obviously increases when they can't access that fresh water that they might use for cooking or for sanitation. And so there is the impact of that, but then also when women and girls are forced from their homes because of flooding, they might have to live in really crowded, unstable living conditions, which can put them at risk of violence and exploitation and, of course, diseases. So there are also the health impacts that come with the reduced access to care for pregnant women, poor nutrition, unsafe water. That can have real implications for pregnancy, for example. And then if women and girls are having to travel further to access fresh water, during that journey they might be exposed to more vector-borne diseases, mosquito-driven diseases, for example, or their safety might be at risk during that longer journey. So there are all these ways that we see unique health impacts to particular groups of people.
Earlier you mentioned that you'd spoken to Chair of the Commission, Christiana Figueres. I thought it was interesting that she conceded that climate experts have often spoken in esoteric terms and have failed to capture the urgency of the crisis. What did she tell you about what they hope to achieve at the end of this process?
Yeah, that's right. I think it's a bit like what we were talking about earlier, how when you're talking in terms of emissions and temperatures and degrees, it can be really hard to capture the human impacts. And I think she really wants to appeal to people's sense of humanity, but she's also realistic. And she spoke from her experiences with the Kyoto Protocol, for example, and the Paris Agreement, where countries are very reluctant to sign up to anything legally binding that forces them to adhere to certain conditions or make certain changes. And if they don't, there'll be consequences in the form of perhaps fines, because they can just withdraw and just change their mind if they're held to account. We've seen major countries withdrawing from all kinds of different agreements and organizations, including in recent times. So she said that change is more likely to come from a combination of legal pressure, scientific evidence, but also just appealing to what she described as enlightened self-interest, you know, essentially making it clear to governments and to powerful corporations that it's actually in their own economic and social interest to change or to be more aware and conscious of the impact of their actions. Also, you know, it's bad for PR. It might be bad for profit lines. It's going to cost lives. That could be very damaging. And really appealing to those interests of powerful governments, powerful corporations.
Do you think that will work, though, in this age of impunity where powerful countries are openly flouting international law and global bodies and institutions are struggling in the face of real great calamity and human rights breaches?
Yeah, no, it's really tricky, isn't it, when sometimes you think, well, what will be enough to provoke change? How much harm? How much destruction? It's hard to answer. I think that Christiana's point is that if you can say it will affect perhaps their bottom lines or their reputations or their ability to continue or to do business, for example, then maybe that will be enough to provoke change. But it's a tough question to answer, I think.
The findings won't be released until September 2027, but there are some people who hope that a landmark advisory opinion that was published by the International Court of Justice will create some accountability. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yes. So the International Court of Justice in 2025 published this significant landmark opinion that ruled that states have a duty under international law to prevent climate damage, and they may face consequences if they don't. And so this ruling, while not binding, has been used to boost climate litigation cases. And there are thousands of these cases playing out worldwide where we've seen examples of people and communities suing governments or suing fossil fuel companies for failing to do enough to protect them from harms. And some of these cases have been successful. So this big international ruling bolsters that, right, and helps for example, the Lancet Commission that we're talking about, all of these cases and the ICJ ruling will be considered by the Commission to help them make recommendations to communities about here's action you could potentially take, but also to serve as a warning, I think, to corporations and governments about the consequences of inaction.
Mm. The findings are still a way off, but those involved in this study are already signalling that those findings will likely be fairly dire. Of course, we know that time is of the essence. Are you hopeful as a reporter who covers health and medicine that this study will galvanise the urgent action that is required?
Yes, I guess the urgency from many of the countries most affected isn't new. It's trying to get action globally, right? That is the real challenge. And we've had evidence for a long time about the impact of sea level rise and the health implications. And progress has been slow and uneven, often kind of slowed by vested interests and political interests and economic interests. So I think there'll be a lot of hope in this commission. It's got extremely talented and leading scientists and researchers involved who are going to analyse the evidence in a really strong way and make solid recommendations. There's no doubt of that. But we're talking about an issue being driven by some of the most powerful industries and governments. And as we've been discussing, it's very hard to get them to change. So it's hard to answer that when you're facing such strong vested interests.
Mm.
Time will tell.
Well, we appreciate you taking us through that. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
That was medical editor Melissa Davey. You can find more of Melissa's work on theguardian.com, and we've linked to her latest pieces on the Full Story page. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. Don't forget, you can follow or subscribe to Full Story wherever you listen to podcasts. And please leave us a review. I'm Noor Haidar. Thanks for listening.